It's Stokely and Zach on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Live from Jackson's in Lodo, it's The Fan's Rockies 25th Anniversary Special. Presented by Coors Light. Here's Zach By, Sandy Clough, and Rockies pitcher Kyle Freeland.
Yes, we are live down here at Jackson's Sports Grill in Lodo, and I am flanked by a couple local legends here. First to my left, the great Sandy Clough, who's been talking sports in Denver for about four decades now. Always, always nice to be on the air with Sandy. And to my right, it's the one and the only Kyle Freeland, the Denver native, coming off a terrific performance today, both individually and as a team. Thank you so much for a couple minutes down here.
Yeah, thanks for having me here.
Let's start off with just the general mood of this baseball team from where the club was at about 3 weeks ago. Take me what the temperature was inside that locker room and how different it is now that you guys have just won for the 10th time in 13 games.
Yeah, it's the mood in the clubhouse is a whole lot better. For a little bit there, like you said, a few weeks ago, I mean, it was hard to come by wins. We were grinding out wins. It was nice to get them, but we were also putting together some bad games. But right now, everything seems to be clicking really well. From the starting rotation to our hitters, defense is always there. Bullpen's coming along really well. They've been having some great outings. But the mood in the clubhouse has been great.
How'd you feel today?
I felt good today. I know it was a bit of a grind. Only got through five and a third and then had to turn it over to the bullpen. But that Diamondbacks lineup, it's a tough lineup. They know how to put together some good at-bats, and they know when to hit the mistakes.
When you go out there, and I think this was true Saturday, you can correct me if I'm wrong, you don't have your A-plus stuff.
Yeah.
You may not have your A stuff.
Yeah.
How have you learned from last year how to get by with less than A stuff?
Yeah, Saturday was definitely one of those games that that I didn't have really anything, but
except the changeup, it seemed like you had the changeup.
Exactly, yeah. But from last year to this year, one thing that I've learned and picked up on is when I'm in situations like that, I realize much sooner. Okay, this is what I have. This is what I don't have. Let's stick to my strengths of what I'm working with and what I have today, and go from there. And maybe those two other pitches will come along as I get down the stretch a little bit. Saturday wasn't the case. I mean, it was mostly the changeup that got me through four innings, and that fifth inning was able to grind with fastball and changeups, couple good sliders here and there. But it was a full grind.
Sandy Clough joining me, talking to Kyle Freeland here down at Jackson Sports Grill in Lodo. The Diamondbacks are a team that, for whatever reason, have had maybe past tense now, the Rockies number. You go back to last season series, you go to the one-game playoff, the way that the season started, taking 2 of 3 from the Rockies, and really up until the last 48 hours, winning 13 of the last 16 games. But here we have a game yesterday where it's dominant offensively, 19 runs, one shy of the Coors field record. And then today you win a game totally differently where you don't score a run after the night after scoring 19. You can't score until I think it was the sixth inning there.
Yeah.
Are you starting to maybe even in the back of your mind build a little bit of confidence against this Diamondback team that has had your number, like I said?
Absolutely. I mean, they're a great team. They do a great job with situations, pitching, hitting, all around a good baseball club. But yeah, they've had our number for the past couple of years. That wild card game still kind of stings just because I mean it was a full-blown slugfest.
Yes.
that whole game. But taking 2 out of 3 from them this week with them at the top of the division, us nipping at the heels with the Giants and the Dodgers, it's making things really interesting, and it's good that we're putting pressure on a team at the top.
Do you look at the standings, or is it too early to scoreboard watch, as it were?
You keep an eye on it.
You're 2.5 behind.
What you're doing, but you're not going into a series thinking, okay, let's win 2 games right here. And hopefully, they lose 2 or another team loses 2 so we can get up at the top. It's not like that. I mean, it's tons of season left. I mean, we're just at the All-Star break. So we still got a ton of work to do, and we're excited to see what we're going to put together.
What's the vibe right now? That's got to be a fun locker room to be in at this juncture in time.
It's very fun. After we turned things around there a couple weeks ago where we kind of collectively got together as a team, it's like, all right, we need to find who we are as a team, and we need to start working towards the goals we want to do. And, you know, since then, it's kind of been building off that, and we've done a great job putting together good baseball wins.
Remember back before this streak started, you had lost 2 out of 3 in San Francisco. You won the final game of the series, though. Nolan Arenado tells Nick Groka, The Athletic, after the game that he's a little frustrated. And he challenges you to do all the things that you've been talking about for the last 5 minutes or so. And then a couple of days later, John Gray gets sent to the minor leagues. You've won the 10 out of 13 during this period. Are the two connected? Nolan's speaking out. John Gray sent to the minor leagues. This is a guy who was the ace of your staff, as you well know. Last year, pitched in the playoff game, the wild card playoff game, was the opening day starter this year. Had won 7 games already. Do you see a relationship between the statement, the move that the club made, and your winning ways over the last couple of weeks?
Not so much. I think Nolan being the competitor that he is and the leader that he is, he wanted to see the team as a whole move in a different direction, and I don't think the two correlate. John's in Albuquerque figuring some things out. I mean, we all are aware of, you know, his stuff and what he can do, so he's figuring some things out on his own. We're 100% sure that he's going to come out on top with it and, you know, join us again at some point and win ball games for us. But, you know, Nolan is he's just one of those leaders that he hates losing so much that he does not want to see a team of this caliber lose.
Did you not so much you individually, I shouldn't say that, but as a rotation, take his words and respond to a challenge, do you think? Because you went, when John got sent down from a 5-man rotation to 4-man rotation, almost nobody does a 4-man starting rotation anymore. You've been doing it, you and Marcus and Tyler Anderson and Sensatella have all been terrific.
Yeah, we've been feeding off
just
each other.
Just the four of you.
Yeah, we've been feeding off each other. You know, when Senza came up, he immediately gave us a great start going 8 innings and absolutely shutting the team down. But no, we feed off each other and we learn from each other, especially me and Anderson being the two lefties.
Yeah.
We'll watch video of each other pitch during our starts and see how they attack lineups. When he started against the Diamondbacks in what was that first game,
he pitched great,
and I mean he was missing arm side quite a bit, which I noticed, which he knew he was doing. He made adjustments and you know kept the team in the ball game, and I was up there watching him, seeing how he was attacking hitters, just because it was somewhat similar repertoires, good changeups, cutter, slider. And love moving the fastball around. So me and him definitely learn off each other. And, you know, I mean, you got Marquez and Senza who are strong arms and have some powerful stuff.
You say you watch one another and maybe learn, pick up this or that from one another. Do you guys communicate that? Is it like an open flow of communication with, hey, I saw this, think about this? Or do you kind of each stay in your own lane knowing that that guy's a pro too and he's going to do his own thing and I'll do my thing?
It's a little bit of both. There's definitely open communication constantly. If I see something or if Tyler sees something or another starter sees something that, you know, this guy is really struggling with this location or this pitch, we're going to say it no matter what, just because you put the thought in someone's mind like, okay, I know how to throw that pitch. I can execute that pitch right there and get a easy out. So there's open communication is key in any rotation to have success.
What's it like playing for a manager that is not only a pitcher, but a left-hand pitcher?
it's a little quirky at times, but Bud's a great guy. He loves the game of baseball. He loves having us continue to learn the art of pitching in the game of baseball. I was saying this the other day, you'll see him sometimes, there'll be a foul ball over by the dugout, and he'll have Tino, our bat boy, you know, flipping the ball. You'll see him there, you know, messing with his own grips, and then he'll walk over to one of the other pitchers and, you know, ask him, like, how do you throw your slider, how do you throw your changeup, things of that sort. And it's really cool to learn from him in that way, just because he's been through that.
It strikes me, being old enough to have watched him pitch in person a lot, that his approach when he pitched was very similar to the approach you have. And I'm thinking back, and you'll remember this, it was on July 4th, I think, last year. And you were pitching against Cincinnati right across the street here. And he came out. I'm watching a game with my wife, and we're down the left field line a little bit. And she turns to me and she says, it doesn't look like just a routine trip to the mound. It looks like he has something to say to you. And I don't know if that was a turning point, but I think, as I recall, you guys went on to win that game. You got through that period. This was early in the ball game. He didn't take you out. Did he challenge you in any way that only a former pitcher as a manager could when he comes out there? Because a lot of the times, he does this not just with you, obviously, but with a lot of people, when he comes out there, he has something to say.
Yeah. No,
and he doesn't give me the ball.
He's that moment last year, it was a learning moment for myself. And it goes back to, you know, my past two starts where I didn't have my stuff working. I needed to figure out what I did have working. And that was one of those days where he came out on the mound. He goes, you need to figure out what you need to do to get the pitches that are working for you. And you need to try and get us as deep in this ball game as you possibly can.
We are live down here at Jackson Sports Grill in Lodo. Sandy Clough along with Kyle Freeland. And when we come back, we talk so much about the local product and how great it is to be a local product. Does it have its taxing moments? That's next.
Sandy Clough here to tell you about SCL Mortgage, special circumstance lending, locally owned and operated. And if you're self-employed or work on commission, this is the place for you. Bank statement loans are back. You don't need tax returns to do your loan. In some cases, the bank statement loans can be done with credit scores in the low 600s. MySpecialMortgage.com on the web, 303-790-2222. The phone number, SCL Mortgage, licensed by the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies, number 1200716.
Live from Jackson's in Lodo, it's the Fans Rockies 25th Anniversary Special, presented by Coors Light. Here's Zach Bye, Sandy Clough, and Rockies pitcher Kyle Freeland.
Yes, and we are live. Come down and say hello. We'll be talking to Kyle right up until 7 o'clock. And then from 7 to 8, we are going to do Rockies trivia. Maybe I'll bounce a couple questions off you, Kyle, see if you know your history. But we are live. Come down and say hello. It's a great atmosphere down here in Lodo. Of course, the narrative around you, outside of being a very good pitcher, is the fact that you are a local product. You went to TJ, right? You got the Rocky Mountains tattooed on your arm.
Yep.
You went to college in Evansville and now, of course, pitching for the Rockies. But there's this famous picture of you in the onesie, you know, back in 1995 or whatever the year is. We talk about all the positives that come along with being a local product. Your friends and family get to watch you, you know, your dad sitting there in the stands and things like that. Is there a taxing nature, though, to being a local product and pitching in your hometown?
I don't believe so, no. For me, I've embraced the fact that I'm getting the rare opportunity to play for my hometown team and represent the state that I grew up in and the team that I rooted for growing up. So I embrace it with open arms, and I've you know, loved every single minute of it.
Is there extra pressure with that, like beneath the top layer?
Try not to have any. I definitely want to have success being a hometown boy playing for the Rockies. I want to be as successful as possible. It's hard at times, but I try not to add any pressure to myself.
We all remember the home opener last year,
yeah.
And I'm sure you still remember that, and the shots of your family in the stands.
That was special.
That was really one of the magical opening day moments in the 25-year history of this franchise. What do you remember about that day and that game?
I remember waking up, coming to the ballpark. It was a day game, so I got there, around 9:30-ish. Got some breakfast in me, and from there kind of just read over my scouting report that I had on the Dodgers, you know, kind of locked myself in, started listening to some music, went through my routine, and then, you know, the game started, and that first inning got two quick outs, and then next thing I know, the bases are loaded.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, no, like, don't snowball on me on my debut.
Yeah.
Ended up getting a ground ball to Story, got out of it, and I just remember taking a huge deep breath and exhaling and just, you know, like, that's what that feels like. It's over with. Let's go.
That's a unique situation, I imagine, in all of baseball right now, where the Rockies' history coincides with the exception of April of 1993, with your lifespan.
Yeah.
When did you first start paying attention to the Rockies, become a fan?
As early as I can remember. My dad, you know, he's a Denver native. His family are Pioneers. So with me and my brother growing up, he always, you know, was talking about the Rockies. He was excited when the city got a franchise. So he was super excited about the fact. And, you know, those first few years, we had some really good players. That first 10 years had really good players. So he was always, you know, teaching us about the game when we were young, telling us about the guys on the Rockies. So we picked it up from a very early age.
Did you have a favorite player growing up?
Larry Walker was probably my most favorite player growing up.
What was it like that you got a chance to meet him?
I did get a chance. I wasn't able to meet him on the when they had everyone out.
All right.
I got to meet a handful of guys. Got to talk to Todd a little bit. Vinny's obviously always in the clubhouse with us.
Yep.
Talked to Jeff Francis. Wanted to meet Aaron Cook. Wasn't able to. But yeah, seeing all those guys, you know, come back together, and just really legends in the Rockies franchise, it was just great.
I think of you and Francis side by side a little bit stylistically. He was a bulldog. Yeah. As you seem to be.
Yeah, he was a great pitcher. I loved watching him and learning from him. Our mechanics are a little different, but he was a guy that when I was learning about pitching and developing at a young age, he was one of the guys that I kind of looked at and kind of learned from.
Yeah. Do you ever take a second and say, and just be mindful of the fact that there's little kids all around Colorado watching you with the same type of lens that you literally watch Larry Walker.
Yeah, and I hope I can, you know, reach out to as many of them as I can and inspire as many of them as I can.
How about a favorite moment growing up? Is there a particular Rockies moment that sticks out to you? Or a period in time?
Oh, yeah. I was a freshman in high school, and I was in ninth period, and my brother had ninth period off. He was a senior, so he was waiting for me to get done with school. He was hanging out in his car. And it was when Kaz Matsui hit, I think it was the game tying or go ahead grand slam. It was a day game. It was during that whole run.
Yeah, in 07.
And he was listening to it on the radio, and I remember getting a text from him while I was in Spanish class, and looked at it, and like right when I read it, like half the room kind of erupted because everyone got notifications about it, and like half the room kind of erupted, had a little celebration, and kind of went back to doing our schoolwork.
Have you, as a team, or earlier in a previous segment, you in passing, you said, you know, our goals as a team. Is this something that's talked about in the preseason, team goals? And if so, what are they?
You know, we always, at the beginning of every season, once we get into spring training, I mean, the goal is always to, you know, make it to playoffs. Obviously, ultimately, win a World Series. But getting to the playoffs, first and foremost, is what you need to get done first. And then from there, you do your work to, you know, see how far you can really take that. Last year was a great turnaround season for us. Got to the wild card game. Unfortunately, that's as far as we got. But we saw the potential of this team, of what we can do. Made some additions in the off season, and really starting to pay off with how we're playing right now.
When you work with a catcher, what's that like? Do you have one you prefer to work with on a more or less regular basis? Because a lot of pitchers do, especially ace pitchers on staffs, they have their guy behind the plate.
So,
do you have a guy?
I don't know if you know this or not, if you've looked into it, but I've made 19 starts, right?
Yep.
Yeah, 19 starts.
Yeah.
18 of my 19 starts, Chris Iannetta has caught me.
Is that right?
And is that, I assume that's by design.
Yeah, by design. We got on the same page quick. And very early into the season, and we kind of realized my strengths, and we were both focused on that and knew what we were able to do. And from there, it just kind of progressed. The only start he didn't catch me was in New York, and that was because the night before he got hit in the forearm on a pitch.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he was out of the lineup the next day. But our entire catching staff is great. Tony's caught me a lot.
Yeah.
Murph has caught me a lot in Triple A.
Right.
They're great guys, and they're all extremely intelligent, hard workers. But you know, me and Chris have just seen eye to eye for the whole season right now, and it's been great.
I asked you about your team goals. Everyone, to an extent, on all level of athletics, has their own personal goals. do you have benchmarks in your mind that is not the priority, because yeah, I know yeah. you're going to say team first, right? But there's got to be benchmarks in your head that you would like to check off.
You know, you always want to, you know, reach a win goal.
Yeah.
You know, this year 15 looks like a nice number for me.
You're more than halfway there.
Yeah. Things of that sort. You know, looking at last year going into this year, you know, I saw my walks were high. Yeah. That was one thing that I wanted to really focus on this year is cutting down my walks. And so far I've done a pretty good job of it. Only had a couple games where my walks have been up. But, you know, after every season, what I'm starting to do is pick one or two stats that aren't big stick-out stats that I want to either improve on or decrease.
I was reading a piece the other day that had a graphic, and I don't know if I can exactly describe it, but it basically represented where you threw the ball in big spots. And it was almost never right down the middle. It was on the edges.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the difference between having good control and having command.
Yeah.
And you seem to have, at least in big spots, even when you don't have your best stuff, you seem to be able to conjure up a way to hit those spots on the edges.
You know, we get a lot of, you know, statistics and stuff thrown at us. So we get printed off papers of, you know, our hot and cold zone, stuff like that.
Yep.
So I've seen images like that before. I didn't realize I was that much on the perimeter of the strike zone. But that's definitely a confidence booster for me, knowing that I'm not living in the heart of the zone where I'm getting hit hard and maybe getting lucky at times. I'm making my pitches in the right spots where I want to be.
We are live down here at Jackson Sports Grill in Lodo. Myself, Zach Bye, along with Sandy Clough, bouncing questions off the local product, Kyle Freeland. And I have a simple question when we get back. Who is the leader in this clubhouse? We'll get to it next.
Live from Jackson's in Lodo, it's the Fans Rockies 25th Anniversary Special, presented by Coors Light. Here's Zach Bye, Sandy Clough, and Rockies pitcher Kyle Freeland.
Yes, and we are live. Come and say hello. We'll be talking to Kyle right up until 7 o'clock, and then we're going to have Rockies trivia from 7 to 8. Should be an absolute blast. Sandy Clough, a local legend to my left, another local legend to my right, Kyle Freeland. Simple question. If something needs to be said in the clubhouse, who says it? Who's the leader? Who's got the voice that carries the furthest?
I'd probably say there's two. Charlie Blackman and Nolan Arenado. Those two guys, when something needs to be said or they feel something needs to be said, one of those two is going to step up and they're going to say it. And obviously they're two great ball players, two great leaders. And, you know, they know what it takes to be good at this game and be successful.
You're only out there once every 5 days. Is it possible for a pitcher on a ball club to exercise, if not be the leader, exercise forms of leadership?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm learning how to do that. I know it's only my second year, but it's never bad to learn how to be a leader, go about it and learn from guys like Chuck, Nolan, Desmond, those kind of guys who have been around for a while and understand what it takes to be a leader. So I'm always leaning on Dez a lot, learning a lot from him. He's one of the guys who's taken me underneath his wing, and I've,
really, that's and I, interesting.
I've learned a lot from him in the past 2 years.
I got an interesting one for you. There is this stigma that's been around as long as baseball in Denver has been being played, that you play in altitude, and for whatever reason, especially offensively. To folks, particularly outside of this region, it's almost a tone of dismissiveness that, it, you know, and Larry Walker's a good example, and he's actually talked about it recently, that there's this stigma from the east, the west, the north, and the south, that if you play in Coors Field, take it with a grain of salt. But then when it comes to the pitchers, the inverse isn't applied to that logic. Does that kind of, pardon me, just kind of piss you and the boys off sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, It's a bit of a double standard. You know, you just got to roll with it, I guess. It kind of irks at us a little bit. You know, kind of me and Otto, you know, with the All-Star game and everything going on. And
yeah, we thought both of you should have been in.
Really? Objectively,
objectively.
Not, right.
I appreciate that. I mean, I thought Otto was a shoe-in, honestly, with the way he pitched in the first half. I mean, having really only one blemish on his entire first half. But, yeah, it's a bit of a double standard where, you know, hitters will get dinged for hitting there, but no one will turn around and say the opposite for pitchers.
Certainly pre-Humidor, the idea was that you couldn't pitch at Coors Field. And I remember when Maddux and Smoltz and Glavine came in, and we talked to them on the air a lot during those times. And they'd say, this is a park they hated pitching, almost to a man. All three of them, Maddux in particular, seemed to have a particular distaste for pitching here. My question to you is, for people who still say you can't fashion a career as a Rocky pitching for a long period of time at Coors Field, how do you pitch at Coors Field? How do you succeed here?
The way I've done it for, I mean, I'm only 2 years in or year and a half in, I've kept the same mentality as if I'm pitching in Atlanta or San Diego. To me, it doesn't matter where you're pitching at. As long as you keep the same mindset of live in the bottom of the zone, execute your pitches, don't let outside factors creep into your head that, you know, this can be an excuse or this is a hitter's park or anything like that. For me, it's been working, and I'm going to continue to have that mentality until it kind of doesn't work, but I don't see that happening.
Low and away, high and tight.
Yeah, book.
Works anywhere.
Yeah.
And you have a great defense behind you. You were talking about 2007 before. This team might even be a better defensive team.
It's impressive.
Than the 2007 team was. What's it like to pitch in front of a defense like that?
Any ball put on the ground, I know, has a good chance to be an out. With Nolan and Story on the left side, making incredible plays day in and day out. DJ doing his thing at second, and you know Dez picking it at first. It's impressive to see those guys work and truly give it their all every single pitch, laying out for you.
Do you feel like as a group, you guys are just hitting your stride for the first time this season?
Consistency-wise, yeah, I believe so. We've played really good baseball. We've come together as a team, putting all the pieces together at once that we need to, with a good start from our starters, hitters hitting early and often, scoring runs early and often, Penn coming in, doing their work, closing the door, and getting a team win.
Has it been frustrating, and I'm going to ask you to kind of open up a little bit here, has it been frustrating for members of the starting staff at points this year with just how you use the word consistently? Unfortunately, there's been stretches where the bullpen has been consistently underwhelming. From a starter's role, you go out there and you pitch, you know, a handful of consistent innings, you, quote, do your job. To see it evaporate more than once, twice, three times, four times, did it begin to wear on you guys as a group at all?
It was tough a little bit, but we didn't speak about it because we had complete faith in our bullpen. You look at the arms out there, and they're incredible arms, and they've established themselves in this league over a period of time to give them that respect. So we constantly kept faith in them that they're going to come out after we were done and do their job. And for a little bit, yeah, it was a scuffle where, you know, it was kind of like, oh, no, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
But now that things seem to be clicking well for them, and they're doing their job. They're coming in. They're getting quick, easy outs. And, you know, they're not allowing hitters to get into advantage counts.
I think this series is a good example of what you're talking about, because the first night of the series, the first game, that's a kick in the stomach.
Yeah.
And then you come back and win the next two. And I remember Earl Weaver used to say, momentum in baseball is tomorrow's starting pitcher. Mm. And it seemed like, and we even got some fan reaction to this effect the other night because we were on talking after the game. And fans are saying, hey, they can still take the series. They got Marcus and Freeland pitching the next two games. Is that the way you guys have come to look at
absolutely.
It?
Yeah, absolutely. Us as starters, we're hungry to get that ball the next day and go out there and get a win, especially after a loss like that we took in the first game of the series where, you know, one pitch killed the game. But I know Marquez has he was scuffling there for a little bit. He's figured some things out over the past handful of starts, and he's been extremely dominant.
It's amazing to watch him, seeming almost without a windup, effortlessly throwing 97, 98. It's I know beautiful. You're not a fireballer. That's not exactly how you pitch. But do you marvel at that when you watch somebody so easily, effortlessly throw that hard?
It's like poetry in motion with him. It's so smooth. Yeah. It's so clean. And it comes out so hard that it's mind-blowing at times. Like, we'll be in the dugout and we'll just be baffled. Like he'll the other day when he was pitching at LA, he was in the seventh inning throwing 99 miles an hour as a starter, and me and Andy are looking at each other like, how is he doing this? And it's just effortless. It just lets it go, and it's so smooth. It's incredible.
How quick you know, I view your job as almost like a quarterback, where you have to have among the shortest memory in sports. You give up a solo home run, two-run jack. That doesn't matter. It's almost like the old roulette wheel gets stopped and then respawn. Yeah. New guy steps up. Guy throws a pick. You got to get over it. You're right back on the field. Is there a time where it's tougher than others to sort of snap out of it with the quickness?
A little bit, yeah. It's a little harder once you get deeper into games, just because those later innings, I mean, you're in winning time at that point. So, you know, you can't be giving the bats away. You can't be letting up at all. You got to stay on the gas pedal. But yeah, you got to have a short memory no matter what position you're in or what inning you're in. I mean, you give up a first inning home run, so what? There's still nine innings to play, and there's a lot of baseball to play, and you got a good offense behind you ready to pick you up.
They have set this year a limit on mound visits. Has that had any discernible effect on you?
Not really, no. We haven't had any issues with it. We really haven't come close to reaching our limit. I think we've gotten down to one, and that was in, like, the eighth, ninth inning where really, I mean, doesn't matter.
Right.
Are
you a big conference guy, or would you rather think it through? Maybe you and Chris would have a word or two, or stuff that's said between innings when you're in the dugout.
I'm good without having any visits, but I know obviously there has to be visits. Yeah. Like today, Chris came out after was facing, I think it was Peralta or Sousa, one of those two, 12-13
right,
pitch at bat.
Right, I remember.
And he came out and he goes, hey, like, you look great. I'm just coming out here to give you a little moment to breathe, get your feet back under you, and let's go. Yeah. And those are nice times to have those breaks in the game where you can reset really quick, take a deep breath, and go back to work.
And Chris knows you well enough.
Yes.
So that he times it properly all the time.
He knows
when
to do it. Yeah.
I tweeted out on Twitter asking for fans that wanted to ask a question through me to you. Okay. And we got a handful of fun ones. One of them that I'll ask you now is, what pitcher did you idolize growing up? And a separate question, is there another pitcher that you sort of crafted your game after, that you saw some of your pitches in another guy?
So we already talked about him, Jeff Francis.
Yeah.
I learned a lot from that guy growing up about how he, you know, attacked hitters, how he went about his game. But he was one of those guys that I kind of idolized. But crafting myself after somebody was something I never really wanted to do. I wanted to create my own image of myself and create my own craft in this game for maybe someone else to idolize for themselves or craft themselves after me. So it's kind of like creating your own image kind of thing. I've been in college, I was compared to Chris Sale coming out. I was a little cross-body.
Nice comparison.
Had a good slider. Yeah, it was a really nice comparison. When I read about that, I'm like, hey, that's nice. Chris Sale, little bit, made some tweaks over the past couple of years. We're probably not so much anymore.
We are live down here at Jackson Sports Grill in Lodo. Sandy Clough, Kyle Freeland having a great conversation. We're going to do Rockies trivia from 7 to 8 o'clock. But when we come back, first, what was the first natural reaction from Kyle Freeland when you found out you had been snubbed? I want to hear that answer when we come back.
Live from Jackson's in Lodo, it's the Fans Rockies 25th Anniversary Special, presented by Coors Light. Here's Zach Bye, Sandy Clough, and Rockies pitcher Kyle Freeland.
All right, Kyle, I know this may not be your favorite subject at this point in time, and I'm sure everyone and their brother is asking you about it, but it's almost in a roundabout and very indirect way an incredible gloss to you, because most folks with a rational working brain understand that you had All-Star written on you so far this season, and it turns out you didn't get selected. I'm asking you to just share a human moment, because this is a natural human emotion. There had to have been some sort of raw reaction. Was it angry? Was it frustrated? Was it sad? Pissed?
I'd probably say a little bit of sad, a little angry. Bud pulled me into his office when we were in Seattle, and he informed me that I didn't make the initial roster. I wasn't hanging my hopes too high on it. I knew it was somewhat of a long shot for me, just being the humble person that I am. But it was a little bit of a tough pill to swallow, being like we talked about, a little bit of a double standard in Colorado. Yeah. But with Otto too, I know it, I'm sure it was tough on him. But you know, the initial reaction was a little angry, a little sad. But I was extremely happy that my name was even in the conversation to be an All-Star. So it was nice to get my name out there, get my brand out there, and you know, let people know, like, you know, Rockies pitchers, we can do it too.
Yeah, look out. Yeah. And has that in turn a little bit of a fire underneath you?
A little bit, yeah. Me and Otto have talked a little bit. You know, we've been seeing, you know, the replacements for the guys who are dropping out or guys who are pitching on Sunday, stuff like that. We've just kind of been, like, keeping tabs on a little bit, seeing just – I mean, you never know when one of our names could be called. But, you know, we've been keeping tabs on it.
We talked about your changeup earlier. That seems to be the pitch that has taken you maybe to a different level this year. How have you come to master that pitch? Because that is a tough pitch to throw effectively on a consistent pitch.
Yeah, still learning it. In college, I never threw it.
Yeah.
Didn't learn one until pro ball, and that's because, you know, the Rockies forced it upon me. Said, if you want to pitch at Coors one day, you got to throw a changeup.
Absolutely.
And once I 100% bought into that mentality and that and what they wanted to do with the changeup, it started developing, and it started at a stage where it was a really bad changeup, and it got hit hard. It wasn't thrown for strikes. But over the past 2-3 years, learning the pitch, changing my grip, finding something I'm comfortable with, something that has enough killed velocity on it and has good action, it took a while. I mean, it was a full development of a pitch that I never threw to a pitch that I throw probably 45% of the time.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. You said, there are, I imagine, a lot of ways to throw a changeup. What, if you can describe it, I know this is radio, but what's the kind of grip, as you would describe it, that you found that worked better for you?
I switched my grip for the final time, hopefully.
Yeah.
In San Diego, I think it was after my first start, after I made my first start of the year.
Okay.
And because the night before, or 2 nights before, the changeup, it was way too hard. It was getting hit hard, and I just need to figure something out. I ended up switching to pretty much a half circle changeup, where I'm throwing it with my middle finger, my ring finger, and my pinky finger, with my thumb underneath as a rudder, and my index finger off.
Okay.
And just started throwing it in flat grounds and catch play, and it felt really good coming out. I was able to kill velocity on it. It had good action to it. It looked like a fastball. Started throwing in bullpens. It started being really good. And from there, it just kind of progressed of learning to throw it to lefties, learn where to throw it to righties, when I can go inside, do it with a righty. So it's been a pitch that I'm still learning a whole lot about, but it's been good to me.
Got a couple questions on behalf of some listeners that have reached out on Twitter. One is like the prototypical pro athlete question, but people love hearing this, so I'll ask it on their behalf anyway. The question we saw twice today is, what was the first cool thing you bought when you started getting major league paychecks?
Oh, man.
I can't remember the first thing I bought when I got drafted. After I got my first paycheck from the draft was I went and bought my first car. I can't remember the first things I started buying once I started getting big league paychecks. I couldn't tell you exactly what it was.
Here's another one, and I think you touched on this 45 minutes ago without realizing it. You were talking about your game day routine, and you had music in your ears. What's your pregame music? Who's your favorite artist? What genre are you into on a game day that you're starting?
Pregame music, been doing it all through pro ball. Is once I, after I've showered and gotten dressed and I head to the weight room to start rolling out and stretching and everything, I'll throw on Machine Gun Kelly.
Mm. And classic.
I got all his albums on my phone. And I'll just hit shuffle and you know, let him play through as I'm getting loose and ready to go.
Love it.
Absolutely. And you're at a point now, this is your last start before the All-Star break. Do you, over the break, whether you make the All-Star team or not, there's still a chance you might get the pitch. What do you think about? How do you recalibrate? If at all, for the second half of the year, because you're going real well, you've been a model of consistency all season.
Yeah.
Is there anything in the second half of the season, if it's a four-man rotation, maybe the rhythm of your starting assignments will be a little different?
We'll see. We'll see how these next three games play out. And whenever I find out where I'll be in the rotation after the All-Star break, where Bud feels he wants to place me starting the second half.
That'll be interesting because you're the number five guy at the start of the year, and you probably, I know you're modest and you won't say this, but you've probably been the most consistent starter from day one.
Yep. Yeah, I'd co-sign that.
We'll just see, you know, how things play out after talking to Bud and the pitching coaches and, you know, see where I'll be in the rotation, but take a few days off, you know, kind of clear my mind, get away from baseball, relax. And, you know, from there, obviously I know the league has started to make an adjustment against me with my pitching arsenal. They did last year, and I had a tough time making the adjustment back to them. And that's where I struggled in the second half. So going into the second half, I'm going to be more aware of seeing if a lineup is making an adjustment to how I'm pitching them, and if they do, then I'll need to know. I need to make an adjustment right back.
You're seeing teams in the second half who have already seen you.
Already seen almost me a handful of times.
There's something in the Rockies' 25th year that has never been done before, and that's win the division. Is this the group, and this will be my final question as on our way out of here, is this the group that you believe in your heart of hearts can get it done?
I believe so. With the path that we're taking right now, with how the team is playing, how we're going about the game the right way, I believe we're on the right path to do so.
That would be special.
Yes.
If you could be a part of that first group.
Yes.
In the 25th year.
Yeah.
Really cool. Really cool. This was a lot of fun. It went as best as it could have gone. You're smart, articulate, humble. Keep talking into a microphone because
absolutely.
I think
you got a future.
Have something
if,
going.
If you want to do this,
maybe.
You know
maybe.
All about Denver, obviously. You grew up here. And the other thing I like to say to you is we really appreciate your coming on after you pitched.
Yeah, no.
Walk across the street on a day you pitched on with us.
I'm glad we got a win. That makes it a lot easier.
Now go get hydrated.
Well, we knew you would.
Go get hydrated, my friend. Great talking to you. This was awesome.
Thanks, Kyle.
Big thanks to Kyle Freeland, the Rockies PR staff, in junction with us making this happen. And thanks to all the folks at home or in your car or however and wherever you may be listening, making this a part of your day. Much appreciated. Kyle, thanks again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. So long. We'll be down here at Jackson's for another hour. Rockies trivia. You guys have a great rest of your night.